The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou, and welcome to Health Chat. Last week, South African Blade Runner Oscar Pistorius was found guilty of culpable homicide after he fatally shot and killed his girlfriend, model Reva Steenkamp, on February 14, 2013. Pistorius says he thought she was an intruder. However, some people believe this was another classic case of deadly domestic violence. Here in the United States, Baltimore Ravens football player Ray Rice was suspended indefinitely from the NFL after footage from a video surfaced online showing what appears to be the football player punching his then-fiancée unconscious in a hotel elevator in February. The couple wed a month later. According to the World Health Organization, on average, 30% of women who have been in a relationship report that they have experienced some form of physical or sexual violence by their partner. Globally, as many as 38% of murders of women are committed by an intimate partner. We'll discuss domestic violence on the program today. And joining us via phone from South Africa is Dr. Ashley Smith, his academic Dean of South African College of Applied Psychology, SACAP. Dr. Smith, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. Also joining us via phone from Philadelphia this time is Jeanine Lisitsky, Executive Director of the organization Women Against Abuse. And Ms. Lisitsky will join us very soon. We don't have her with us yet. But joining us also from Philadelphia is Renee Norris-Jones. She is a survivor of domestic violence and former Women Against Abuse client. She is currently a board member of the organization. Ms. Renee, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Again, this is Renee Norris-Jones. Let me remind our listeners, if you'd like to participate in the show with your questions or comments, you can call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1, and you can ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com. We'll discuss domestic violence in a moment. And let me start first. Actually, let's get right into it with Dr. Ashley. In my introduction, I gave the case of two athletes, one a runner, the other one a football player. And presently in the news, you probably heard of both cases, if not at least one of them. And there is one of the commonality here is the fact that both of them are athletes. So let me ask you this question. Are athletes, and I don't mean to generalize, but just out of curiosity, are athletes prone to being abusive because of the physical nature of their work?
No, I don't think it's exclusive to any particular occupation or any particular persuasion. I think what it would be good for the listeners to just be aware of is that the particular case that we're dealing with and having to have come to terms with is the allegations that came against Blade Runner Oscar Pistorius. And I guess what my feeling is that although he is an athlete, what Oscar Pistorius was in fact tried for was the fact that he killed his girlfriend, and the circumstances, of course, have been highlighted over the last few months in court and via the media. But he's one of many people, I think, from various occupations, persuasions, vocational persuasions as well, who for whom family violence has evidently been a very real part. I would hate to say that It has purely been an issue of family violence in the case of Oscar Pistorius, because a lot of other things came out in court that had to do with his family, with his upbringing, with his handicap, and so on. So, no, I don't think it's just peculiar to one particular occupation or one particular sport.
Okay, and you mentioned the issue of family violence, and we will definitely talk about how much influence that has with someone's attitude and behavior towards violence as
yes.
an adult.
Yes.
Perhaps we can just yes. go straight into it. Why don't you go ahead and answer this question? How much of that influence someone's behavior as an adult?
Well, look, I can only speak into a particular context, and that is the South African context.
Sure.
And maybe it would be good for the listeners just to be aware of the fact that there are many contributing factors to the high rate of domestic and sexual violence. In South Africa, we're dealing with an estimated more than 1 million rapes in South Africa each year. Key among these are patriarchal beliefs that men are superior to women, notions of masculinity that reinforce violence and the use of weapons. I think there is certainly an element of that. There's a strong element of that, for example, in the what came out in the trial of Oscar Pistorius. There's a strong element of masculinity, of beliefs about men and women, stereotypical beliefs that came out. But in South Africa, we're dealing with a huge, huge issue, a huge problem. Police statistics on domestic violence in South Africa are always limited by the nature of this discussion. But the South African Medical Research Council, or what we call the MRC, have found that 40% of men have hit their partners. One in four men has raped a woman. I mean, these are hard statistics to come to terms with, aren't they?
Yes.
Three-quarters of men who admit to having raped women say they did it first as teenagers, so it's a longitudinal problem. And while a quarter of the country's women have been raped, I mean, that's an extraordinary statistic.
Yes, it is.
2% of those raped by a partner report, in fact, the incident to the police. So a lot of what is going on, we just don't know what's under the surface. We just have no idea. We're only looking at the tip of the iceberg, and that's when incidents are reported to the police, particularly in terms of statistics.
Yes.
So, I mean, we're dealing with a huge problem here that has many drivers.
Yes. Okay.
For men, many drivers.
Okay. Now, let me go to you, Ms. Renee Norris-Jones. And
yes.
You have been yourself a victim of domestic violence. You live in the United States, a Western country, and you are an American. Dr. Ashley Smith mentioned the fact that some of the aspect of this issue of domestic violence was directly or indirectly related to culture to some extent. But being from the Western world, you were a victim. Can you give us a sense of your experience as an American woman living in America, being a victim of domestic violence? How did this happen?
So in America, and I'm not sure if this is global or not, but I know here in the U.S., it crosses every social, economic platform. So there's not any particular person. It's been 35 years for me. It still impacts my life. I suffer from PTSD. A great part of the reason why I'm involved in the movement here is, for one, I am returning the favor, Women Against Abuse here in Philadelphia back in the late 70s when they were just starting. Got me 1,600 miles away from Pennsylvania to Texas because my life was in danger. I was very young. Back in the 70s, there was little said about domestic violence or other crimes against women. So society did not offer anything. I married very young. At some point, I went to my father. There were six girls in my family. went to my father. I am the youngest female. And this was probably in the middle of the seven-year marriage. Mm. And during that time, I went to my father and said, I can't take this anymore. And he looked at me and he said, what did you think marriage was?
Okay.
So the number one question that I still get 35 years later is, why did you stay? One of the questions that the world is looking at and asking Jhené Rice is, why is she staying? And it's just not something you can pick up and walk away from. There are many, many factors.
So why do women stay in general? And you say people ask you this question. So what is the answer? Why did you stay for 7 years?
Well, you know what? I don't think it's any one question. Mm-hmm. One of the questions that I try to flip it around to is that a lot of times people have more empathy for someone that's being stalked. It's like, oh, my God, that person's being stalked, and they're tracking them down, and they're after them. Imagine being stalked by someone who you have an intimate relationship with. They know more about you than a stranger. Yeah. So I also refer people to the D.C. sniper, which was, you know, a number of years back. That was domestic violence.
Yes.
I mean, he sought out to kill his wife over a custody issue. But his thinking was, I'm going to randomly kill people across several states. So when I eventually throw her in the mix and then kill people after that they won't suspect me. And I tell people, imagine being in an intimate partner relationship with someone who is that devious in thought that they're going to kill all of these innocent people just to get at you.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone, so to be able to walk away from a situation like that, your life is in danger. I mean, we know that the most dangerous time for a woman is when she's leaving. My sister in 1999 was actually staying at a shelter and ran into her then husband, and it was all over the local news. He killed her and then killed himself.
Oh, wow.
My own husband today, this is 35 years later, is in jail for the rest of his life. But he's not in jail for anything that he did to me, even though what he did to me was horrific. He went to jail because a year and a half after we divorced, he killed his mother with an axe.
Oh, wow.
I still get chills thinking about that because I know that could have been me.
Yes, yes, yes.
These are deadly, deadly relationships.
That's very, very, very scary. And let me
And just to add, this is Janine Lisitsky, Executive Director.
I was coming
Women
to
Against
you,
the
actually,
Beast.
So please go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure. I wanted to just point out a few other reasons. And, you know, it's sad that we're still in a time when people first ask, why would she stay? You know, instead of a question of why would someone harm someone in that way? And I think that's the question we need to be asking, and also putting up a challenge to people who use abuse, you know, reach out and get some help. There can be a different way. But some of the reasons, in addition to what Renee mentioned about fear, about being in real danger, is that oftentimes part of the dynamics with domestic violence is that a person will isolate their victim, you know, separate them from all support, friends and family. And so now when they consider leaving, they really do feel alone and wonder who would support them, you know, how could they even get help? They may also have children in common now, you know, and they have this idea of keeping the family together, really believing that the person will change. But what we know is that, yes, change can happen, but only through, like, long-term treatment and intervention for this issue. Renee mentioned economic factors, and that's very real, not only being dependent on a partner for the, you know, economics, financial dependence, but also the abusive partners utilizing economics as a weapon. So mm-hmm. I've seen so many times sabotage of jobs and employment to where it really ruins a person's resume and then ability to get jobs, you know, because of their pattern. And it's all because of sabotage. The abuser taking keys from the person who needs to get to work, or you know, injuring them so they can't go to work, etc.
Okay, thank you so much for this. Dr. Smith, I'm sorry, but Ms. Norris Jones' experience still gives me the chill. And I wanted to ask you, in a case like this, first of all, maybe I could have your reaction on what she says. But she, 35 years ago, she went through the experience with her first husband. 35 years later, another husband, even though the abuse wasn't, the violence wasn't toward her, but he has the sign. So how do you recognize, identify the signs? Is there a pattern there that you look for? What is it that can be a sign of someone who might have this problem that to stay away from?
Yes, and there's many signs. And one of the best pieces of advice is to give time when you're developing relationships and to really, you know, figure out what the other person is like. In abusive relationships, you'll often see jealousy right in the beginning of a relationship, and the abuser might say, well, it's a sign of love. I just want to spend all my time with you because I love you so much. Maybe controlling behavior. The abuser may not let the other person make any personal decisions. Oftentimes there's quick involvement, get living together right away, or because there's pressure from the abusive partner to do that. There's unrealistic expectations that the partner would be able to meet all the needs of this person. I talked about isolation. And then the abusive partner might blame everyone else for his actions, his or her actions. They're out to get me, et cetera.
Yeah, okay. And thank you. I believe this is Ms. Lisitsky who responded. And I was asking that question to Dr. Smith, but I really would like to have your reaction as well in terms of some of the signs, if this is not redundant to what Ms. Jeanine just said, but also, what can lead someone to becoming this violent? We talk about family environment, but I'd like you to expand a little more, Dr. Smith, on this, please.
Yes, I've been very moved, in fact, by what I've just heard in regard to an experience of domestic violence. Look, there are a number of issues here. First of all, I think a very, very real part is the experience of the perpetrator in their own childhood relationships and their own family background. I think that people are very fast to get into a relationship because they love the person. They want to be in the relationship. They're prepared to look in the early stages of the relationship, almost any problem in order to build the relationship and to not take into account some of the very, very real problems that come from dysfunctional family structures, history of interpersonal interactions within the family. These are all subtle causes of perpetrator violence into the future. I'm a psychologist. I lecture in the field of psychology, and a family systems model of intervention is very much based on this understanding that you need to focus on what type of communication has taken place in the family prior to the family of either partner prior to getting into a new relationship. And I don't think enough questions are often asked in that regard. I think there's also another driver or another issue that contributes to some extent to perpetrator violence. And these are basically issues of personality disorder, difficult upbringing, biological dispositions such as addictions, attachment disorders caused in early childhood. These are all issues that contribute ultimately to an explosion of domestic violence, where even the perpetrator is caught unawares about their own reaction. Because every relationship has its tension points. Every relationship has its problems. Yeah. It's not that everyone who comes from a difficult upbringing or even addictive prior addictive behavior or abusive behavior or an attachment order disorder is naturally going to become a perpetrator. But I do think that there are triggers that can set off an explosion of domestic violence that have been sitting in the background for years and years and years and have actually not been dealt with. And then both the abused and the perpetrator suddenly are into a situation that neither can control. And, of course, in most cases, the victim has no prior understanding of what's going to happen, and therefore doesn't have a reserve of responsive behaviors. They're just caught unawares. And often the perpetrator himself is caught unawares by the level of the violence that he's now exhibiting. Mm. So I think, I don't know if that helps, but I think these are some of the drivers.
Okay. Ms. Runin, you talked about your experience and I was wondering, because we hear a lot of time that the perpetrator tend to blame the victim or the environment. And sometimes, actually, victims tend to blame themselves. That's what we hear, at least. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Smith or Ms. Lisitsky. They tend to blame themselves sometimes. Now, in your case, given that you mentioned that your second husband also had some violence where he killed, he's in prison now. Did you at some point at all feel like you failed again, or feel like you did not own up to your experience, to identifying these threats? Was he violent with you at all, or did just this happen with his mother?
You know, it just, for me, and with my first husband, for me, it happened out of the blue. There was nothing for the first year and a half. It was a Friday night date night. I mean, I remember when the first time it happened. It was a casual conversation. I was finishing putting makeup on in the mirror. He was sitting on the side of the bed, and we were deciding where were we going to dinner. It was, you know, what about Italian? Oh, I had that for lunch. What about Mexican? It was as easy as that, and I woke up on the floor.
Okay.
So it was the first thing, and domestic violence has a lot of shame that goes with it. So there were no public service announcements. Society didn't deal with it. As I said, at some point I reached out to my father, who was my hero, and he told me that basically told me that's what marriage was. So you didn't get support from society. My family, my own family would say, come over to dinner. I hear you're staying at that shelter place, and I would get there, and there's an extra plate at the table. You guys need to get back together. Figure if you came over here, so they would turn me back in. So not only was my husband isolating me from friends and family, you know, saying that they were, you know, trying to manipulate me or they were doing things bad, and he was the only good thing in my life, my family was turning me back in. At some point, I remember thinking, I'm going to have to be the only crazy person out here, but I can't take this anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was the social systems that were turning their back on me. Hmm. And people didn't talk about it. I had never, something that came up early was, how do we battle this? It was it's domestic violence education. If I would have known that such a thing existed, I was floored. I had no words for what had just happened. I had no words for it because I had nothing in my life, no education. It did not happen in my home. I had no words for what happened, and society was not ready to talk about it.
Yeah, and that's a very, very good point, Ms. Janina. I will come to you with that point to see with your organization, Women Against Abuse, how do you address this? What is the very first step that you take in addressing this issue when you meet some victims?
You know, first, we have a range of programs and services. One is the Philadelphia Domestic Violence Hotline, and that's really a great clearinghouse. Anyone who needs help or just is thinking about, you know, having a different life or wants some support can call that number. And then from there, we start safety planning with them, and that means that we develop plans around the specifics of their life to help them towards increasing their safety, whether that means leaving the relationship or if they're staying, how can they be safer? And that could be a range of safe housing, legal services, or just counseling and support. And so that's what, but if somebody comes into our organization as a residential client, the thing that we use the most is options counseling, supportive counseling and options counseling, because we want to reestablish empowerment. We know that the basis for domestic violence is an aim to control someone else. Mm-hmm. And so when people come in, what we find really helps to move people along is reestablishing their own personal power to make choices and have options. I know something that was said about that these triggers, the doctor was talking about triggers and set off an explosion and that nobody can control it. But I would counter that and say that domestic violence really is a pattern of behaviors in order to control another party. And so the person certainly knows what they're doing and utilizes different tactics to, you know, continue to have control over that person. Now, there certainly is different types of interpersonal violence that aren't necessarily described as domestic violence, but when we're talking about domestic violence, it really is about establishing control.
So in this case, Dr. Smith, whether the person, the perpetrator, is aware or is in control of what he is doing or not in control of what he is doing, what can be done to help these abusers to stop the cycle of abuse and violence?
Well, I must say that I'm very impressed by the idea of options counseling and to bring people back into control. I think the first thing is that it needs, you see, domestic violence is highly stigmatized. People don't like talking about it. Mm-hmm. And only in South Africa, I can talk a little bit about our South African context, where women particularly, women and children are being encouraged more and more to come out and speak out their issues. That's what I like about this evening, that we have somebody who is able to speak into it from a personal experiential point of view. That's a very, very important thing, not just for other women, but it's also a very important thing for perpetrators to hear. Because I think there's a tendency on the part of the perpetrator, as we have heard tonight, to in some way deny the abuse entirely, either saying it didn't happen or trying to exclude it from their account of their behavior.
Okay.
So I think the more that women speak out about it, and this is certainly happening in South Africa more and more.
Yeah. Okay. Unfortunately,
the more women speak it out.
Yes, I'll let you finish your
thought.
The
more the perpetrator is seeing the degree of trauma that this creates for the rest of someone's life. I mean, up to 35 years to still be in therapy for trauma.
Dr. Ashley,
how deeply violated this is.
Dr. Smith, unfortunately, I have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. And I thank you, Ms. Lizitsky Janine with Women Against Abuse and Renee Norris-Jones with Women Against Abuse. Thank you both for joining us, and Dr. Ashley Smith with SACAPS of Africa. And I'm your host, Lino Mudu in Washington. Thanks to you, listeners, with your producer, Jackson Vungani in Washington, D.C. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.